Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 10th, 2026, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page, Arts and Entertainment, showing art feels good. Gallery 37 looks to develop Decatur art scene. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Art is stashed in all corners of Decatur's newest gallery, Gallery 37, located at 3777 North Woodford Street, Suite C, opened in June. "We've been kind of developing," said owner Ahmad Bond. "You know, it's the art scene." As soon as guests enter the colorful gallery, they are met by the bold paintings created by Brielle Jackson. Her artwork was first shown publicly at MacArthur High School exhibits, and my mom always used to post my paintings on her Facebook page, the 19-year-old said. The paintings caught the attention of Gallery 37 administration. "That makes me feel really good about myself," Jackson said. Paintings, drawings, and sculptures aren't the only works on display or showcased. "We have rooms that are for clothes and stuff like that," Bond said, "additional forms of art. We have a room that's going to be dedicated to computer graphics." The venue has partnered with Blue Lotus Media in Decatur, encouraging creative outlets for students and young artists. "We've been involved in all the local art events," said Jalen Clinton, CEO of Blue Lotus Media. Together, the organizations were able to reach the youth and young artists. Administrators have hosted art classes and events at the Boys and Girls Club, Juneteenth events, and local schools. "We've been quietly trying to build the art culture here in Decatur," Bond said. Gallery 37 also has worked with the Decatur Area Arts Council in the past. "But we get the people in the back door," Bond said about unknown artists. The Decatur Area Arts Council, it's governing a lot of the major artists already. 6 months after the gallery opened, it was allowed to host the Martin Luther King Jr. student exhibit. "It's an honor, especially Gallery 37's first year," Bond said. "We evolved to this point. It's a testament to our growth." The gallery already has made a mark in the artist's world. Paintings hang on the walls from St. Louis, Atlanta, Georgia, Memphis, as well as Texas and Jamaica. "We've been working to get some work from Nigeria here," Bond said. Along with the exhibits, encouraging art also includes mentorship, instruction, and motivation, administrators said. Gallery 37 hosts an event each Wednesday night titled Vibes, in which artists can register to work on their projects. "You pick a spot anywhere in the gallery, set your stuff, and just create," Bond said. "With a bunch of artists in the room at the same time, it kind of gives you a creative spire." The environment is designed to provide comfortable opportunities for artists of all genres. "It's definitely a place where you get a lot of inspiration, a lot of mentoring, in whatever your discipline is," Bond said. "Don't be ashamed if your art is at any level." Gallery 37 began by reaching out to the youth, Bond said. "When you're trying to make an impact on the community, you get to the seeds," he said. "Because if you change them early, then they're the ones that are going to be running things. You make a major impact." The gallery has grown to accept artists of all ages. "We just need a place where we can all congregate to keep us all going," Bond said. "When you come in, we just want you to see work everywhere." The artist's focus for Gallery 37 includes not only visual aspects, but other forms of art, including poetry. Plans include adding a Friday night event for poets and those interested in lending their voices to the spoken word. "We have a lot of artists that are multifold," Clinton said. "They don't necessarily paint." Gallery 37 has turned out to be just one step in Jackson's artistic career. One of her paintings was showcased in the Illinois State Museum in Springfield during the summer of 2025. "I think I'm always going to have a love for painting," she said. "It's something I always want to keep on doing." However, Jackson relies on the Gallery 37 mentorship for motivation. "They really uplift me whenever I'm not feeling like picking up a paintbrush," she said. "Anything I do, they make my biggest support system. You just want to soak up their energy." and some color photos here, a small color photo. Gallery 37 features artists both local and international on North Woodford Street in Decatur on Wednesday, February 4th. And a traditional art gallery has white walls, but Gallery 37 has black painted walls, and there are various paintings on the walls here, and above the door, G37, cutout letters in white, but the 3 is flipped backwards. Joseph Ressler, Herald Interview, and a larger photo here. Jalen Clinton, CEO of Blue Lotus Media, points out paintings inside Gallery 37. Medium-sized color photo here, and it looks like a sculpture. Looks like a person coming out of the painting. No facial features, but the upper torso, arm, and head. But it looks like there are two arms coming out from the white background. It's all white. It's a very stunning piece. Looks like one of the arms is grappling the individual's head, and the other one is grappling their right arm. A very interesting sculpture. And it says works from artists all over the country hang on the walls of Gallery 37. And finally, owner Ahmad Bond talks inside Gallery 37. And he's surrounded by a number of paintings. State environment. Aging oil wells may cost the state millions. Advocates say state behind on regulation. Springfield. This is by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois. Anyone who has driven the back roads of southern and central Illinois is familiar with the sight of oil pump jacks that dot the landscape. Decades ago, it was common to see those machines bobbing up and down, like those drinking bird toys that seem to operate on perpetual motion, pulling up oil from hundreds of feet below the surface to fuel the region's burgeoning transportation industry. Today, however, most of those pump jacks sit idle, either because of the oil below has all been pumped out, or the cost of pumping what remains underground exceeds what the market would pay. Now, a new report suggests those pump jacks and the inactive oil and gas wells that lie below them are more than just relics of a bygone industry. They could also be environmental time bombs lurking underground, threatening to expose Illinois taxpayers to more than $1 billion in future cleanup costs. The majority of Illinois' 30,000-plus wells are likely producing little to no oil, yet are still not properly plugged, emitting toxic and climate pollutants and threatening air and drinking water relied on by nearby communities, the report states. The report is based on research from the Bloom Legal Clinic at Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law and the environmental advocacy group Client Earth USA. It says the potential liability facing the state may be larger than officials have acknowledged so far, but it also says the lack of reliable data about the working status of oil and gas wells in the state, coupled with the state's weak regulatory framework, makes it hard to know the exact size and scope of the threat Illinois faces. Thus, it's nearly impossible to hold drilling companies accountable for paying the cost themselves. The fundamental point is, whatever amount of a problem we've got, it's the industry's responsibility to deal with it, and that's what the system is not achieving, Robert Weinstock, director of Northwestern's Environmental Advocacy Center and lead author of the report, said in a recent interview. Oil and gas in Illinois. According to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, the history of oil and gas production in Illinois dates back to the 1850s, when the first gas wells were drilled near Champaign. But it didn't become a major factor in the state's economy until the first half of the 20th century, when oil became critical to the modern transportation industry. Since the 1850s, approximately 155,000 wells have been drilled in Illinois, mainly in the southern half of the state in a geological area known as the Illinois Basin, which stretches across portions of Illinois, Indiana, and western Kentucky, according to data from the Illinois Petroleum Resource Board. A private, member-based industry association, production peaked in the early 1940s when it averaged more than 100 million barrels per year. It dropped significantly after the end of World War II. Production rebounded somewhat in the 1950s and 1960s with the development of new technologies like water flooding and hydraulic fracturing, or fracking. which enabled drillers to squeeze more oil out of expiring wells, but it has been on a steady decline since then, with production dwindling to just over 7 million barrels in 2024. Still, according to IDNR, there are more than 23,400 oil and gas production wells operating in Illinois, although the agency identifies most of those as stripper wells that produce less than 1.5 barrels per day. The agency also lists 6,535 injection wells that store salt water and other fluids associated with oil and gas production, plus another 1,078 gas storage wells. According to the Northwestern and Client Earth report, precise data about production and well activity in Illinois is hard to verify because the state itself does not collect such data. And without accurate data, the report says it is hard to know how many inactive wells there are in the state and whether they've been properly capped or plugged to prevent them from leaking contaminants into the air or nearby water supplies. When we tried to look up production data for wells in Illinois, we found there was none, and it wasn't maintained by the IDNR, Weinstock said. And the folks at Client Earth said, well, you can get production data from the state agency in almost every other state in the country. What's going on here? He said that realization inspired the research project. It was really bringing that national perspective to Illinois, and then realizing just how behind Illinois was when it comes to regulating wells at the end of their productive lives, he said. Cleanup responsibility. Under Illinois law, the responsibility for plugging oil and gas wells and cleaning up the sites at the end of their productive life rests with well owners and operators. IDNR is the agency assigned to enforce that requirement through regulations. But the report points out there are numerous ways well operators can avoid that responsibility, and it suggests IDNR has frequently been unable or unwilling to take strong enforcement action. For example, state law requires wells to be plugged and capped once they become inactive, which is defined as not producing any oil or gas for 24 consecutive months. But since the state does not collect production data, it is difficult for state officials to determine whether a well is active or inactive. In addition, the report notes permit holders can delay having to plug and cap a well in five-year increments by applying to have it classified as temporarily abandoned. That requires the well to meet certain conditions and for a surety bond to be in place, but it also only costs $100 per year instead of the $100,000 that it can cost to permanently seal a single well. In many cases, the state also requires well permit holders to post a surety bond to cover future remediation costs. In past years, the report notes IDNR only had authority to require bonds from permit holders who had previously been sanctioned for regulatory violations, but the law was updated in 2025 with passage of Senate Bill 2463, which broadened the requirement to include any new permittees as well as any permittees who have failed to make payments at any time in the preceding 5 years. Even with that change, however, the report argues the bonding requirements are still too weak to ensure that future remediation costs will be covered. While the bill increased the bonding amount for a single well to $10,000 instead of $5,000, it says that is still not enough to cover the actual cost of plugging a single well. And the law still allows permit holders to cover multiple wells with a single blanket bond at rates that can average as little as $1,000 per well. Additionally, the report notes IDNR has authority to order well owners and operators to plug inactive wells and clean up those sites, but it says IDNR has often failed or refused to exercise that authority and has effectively allowed well operators to ignore such orders. The report states that most people who receive notices of violations do not willingly comply, that no further steps are taken in most cases, and that few wells are plugged due to notices of violation or follow-on enforcement actions. Ultimately, when all other mechanisms to hold well owners and operators responsible for plugging and cleaning up their sites, the responsibility falls back to the state. According to information on the IDNR website, there are 3,991 wells enrolled in the agency's Plugging and Restoration Fund, a program that was established in 1991 to plug leaking and abandoned wells. The current fiscal year's budget provides just over $64.8 million, most of which comes from federal grants. but the report argues that the actual size of Illinois' future liability is likely many times that amount because the wells currently enrolled in the program represent only a fraction of the more than 30,000 wells the IDNR actively monitors. IDNR response. In an email statement, officials at IDNR said the issue of orphan and abandoned wells is a national problem, which is why the agency is now focusing on using federal resources to increase the number of wells being capped and plugged. The federal dollars come to Illinois through the 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act are critical because they've allowed the state to increase the pace at which we plug wells and have allowed us to utilize our state funds in ways we could not before, IDNR said. This is an endeavor that is going to take time, and IDNR is working as fast as it can, prioritizing the most urgent and potentially dangerous wells first, the agency said. Recommendations. The report offers several policy recommendations aimed at ensuring the oil and gas producing industry is held responsible for those costs rather than the public. Those include requiring producers to report more data to IDNR so it can more easily identify inactive or abandoned wells and calling on IDNR to be more aggressive in enforcing laws that are already on the books. It also suggests actions that could require legislative changes, such as increasing surety bond requirements, repealing laws that allow companies to declare wells temporarily abandoned indefinitely, and restricting the ability of companies to transfer permits to other entities that then file for bankruptcy protection to avoid paying cleanup costs. If it's hard to tell precisely what corporate entity should be held responsible, then the question is, who's going to have to bear those costs, Weinstock said. Should it be everyone in the state, and then the state's coffers, or should it be the industry that still operates those wells? Officials at the Illinois Petroleum Resource Board declined to comment on the report. And there's a small color photo here. An oil well pump jack is pictured. Illinois could be on the hook for plugging and cleaning up thousands of inactive and abandoned oil and gas wells. Provided photo via morgfile.com. Elections 2026, four Dems vying for Mendoza's comptroller post. Ben Slezinski, Capital News, Illinois. Who wants to manage Illinois' checkbook as the state faces growing financial uncertainty? Three state legislators and the treasurer of one of the state's largest counties have raised their hand. Incumbent comptroller Susana Mendoza, who first took office in 2016 in the middle of the state's infamous two-year budget stalemate, is not seeking re-election. Her departure created the first open primary for the Democratic Party for a statewide constitutional office since 2018. The comptroller's primary responsibility is ensuring the state's bills are paid, a task that wasn't always easy, but one that Mendoza has fine-tuned in recent years. With Mendoza stepping aside, State Senator Karina Villa of West Chicago, Representative Margaret Croak of Chicago, Representative Stephanie Kifowit of Oswego, and Lake County Treasurer Holly Kim are running in the Democratic primary. Each sat down with Capital News Illinois reporters in recent days to answer questions on our Capital Cast podcast. Brian Drew, a Republican from Southern Illinois, is running unopposed for his party's nomination. Who are the candidates? Kifowit is the longest tenured legislator of the group, having joined the General Assembly in 2013. She is leaning on her Marine Corps service and past career as a financial advisor to argue she is the most qualified candidate. In this race, individuals need an independent, knowledgeable, experienced person for this position, one that has a backbone like I do from being a United States Marine Corps veteran, and one that has life experience along with professional experience, Kifowit told Capital News Illinois. She is facing an uphill battle in fundraising, however, as her campaign raised the least money of the candidates in the final quarter of 2025. Croak is leading the financial race thus far as the only candidate to raise at least $500,000 during that fundraising period. Croak has been in the legislature since 2021 and was previously a deputy director at the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. She is a close ally of Governor J.B. Pritzker and has received endorsements from several top Democrats, including the influential Cook County Democratic Party, but Pritzker has not been one of them. We all have seen bills pass, and we've seen bills blow up, and it's because of your relationship or if you understand how to get these things done, Croak told Capital News Illinois. So I feel really confident about my ability to kind of steer the ship in the right direction. Croak narrowly won the support of the Cook County Party over Villa, who is backed by Senate President Don Harmon and U.S. Representative Delia Ramirez, as she tries to carve a lane as the most progressive anti-Trump candidate in the race. Villa has been in the legislature since 2019, but does not have a financial background. Her career was in social work. This is the people's money, and a social worker who has this background, who has the understanding, who has spent all of this time in the General Assembly by combing through the budget and understanding how at times, in order to balance budgets, we have to actually cut service line items that are so critical for everyday people to make ends meet. The social worker being the comptroller makes the most sense, Villa told Capital News Illinois. Kim has no legislative experience in Springfield, but spent 4 years on the Mundelein Village Board and has served as treasurer in Lake County, Illinois' third largest county, with more than 700,000 residents since 2018. She boasts support from dozens of officials in local government and Democratic county chairs across the state. I'm in charge of billions of dollars, Kim told Capital News Illinois. All the checks go out with my name on it, which means out of four people running, I'm already doing the comptroller job. I'm definitely going to be a fierce protector of people and their money. Budget philosophy, the comptroller does not directly deal with the legislative process of approving a budget, but the candidates had plenty of ideas on how the state should manage its finances. Mendoza herself has been outspoken supporter of boosting the rainy day fund and has continued to advocate for ways to increase that size. The fund's $2.4 billion balance only funds about 2 weeks of state operations, and lawmakers suspended the monthly transfer to the fund this year to free up money for other priorities in a tight budget year. To continue to put money away for a rainy day when we're in the middle of a tsunami, that's not when we should be putting money away for a rainy day, Villa said, adding, there's no way to prioritize that in this budget. Raising revenue is the central focus of Villa's campaign. She suggested the state implement a tax on digital advertising and retry implementing a graduated income tax to raise more money for social services, she said, are inadequately funded. Such a measure needs approval from both lawmakers and the general public. But voters soundly rejected the proposal, the proposed constitutional amendment that would have allowed it in 2020. Kim took a similar approach and said the state's budget goals during Donald Trump's presidency should be focused on maintaining the state's credit rating, which was upgraded 10 times between the three major rating agencies under Mendoza. I would advocate not only for the progressive tax to be brought up as a longer-term solution, especially with years of rocky finances headed our way with Trump still in government for the next, 3 years, Kim said. Croak and Kifowitz said they support reinstating regular funding for the Rainy Day Fund. The comptroller's role is very vital in managing the finances and prioritizing and making sure we're paying down our debt, Kifowitz said. Kifowitz said the rainy day fund should be increased to at least $5 billion. As the lead negotiator on pension reform for House Democrats, she also said that when bonds the state is currently repaying expire, she wants to dedicate those revenues to paying down pension debt. Pritzker has proposed a similar plan, but so far it hasn't gained traction in the legislature. Croak said she wants those revenues to go to the rainy day fund, and she suggested the state consider refinancing its pension debt. It all goes back to the credit rating. If we can increase our credit rating, showing that we have financial stability, that we have those reserves, and it helps us in the long term with our long-term borrowing, it's something that we need to do, she said. Role of the office. Each candidate presented a different vision for how they will lead the office, with some saying they will use it to push policies in the General Assembly, and others saying they will focus more on the comptroller's administrative responsibilities. Villa said many answers to problems in Illinois depend on the legislature, and the comptroller's job should be to bring attention to the fact that even though we are passing balanced budgets, we are missing a significant amount of money in order to fully fund the services that people need. Kifowitz said the comptroller must balance legislative goals with administrative responsibilities. Her goals include creating a nonprofit division to make it easier for nonprofits to track funds that will receive from the state. Croak said her main focus will be on administrative responsibilities. I hope that everyone running just wants to make sure that this office continues to work, because when it breaks down, state government breaks down, she said. Kim said she wants to use the office to better connect with constituents about the office's responsibilities. The problem isn't government. The problem is government doesn't have really good short explanation videos that are snacks, and that's where we are all right now, she said. And I think having more snack videos of information of what's in the comptroller's office will help people to trust government and understand through transparency in those explanation videos, putting their mark on the office. Each Democrat complimented Mendoza's work, but listed off changes that they would make. Mendoza's successor will have to be nimble to respond to constant federal uncertainty and be a watchdog over the state finances to make sure the state isn't overspending, Kifowitz said. She added that among her initiatives will be opposing any pension system investments in artificial intelligence or cryptocurrency. Upgrading the office's technology is also a top priority for Croak and Kim. I've seen the software where you can follow appropriations within the budget and understand where taxpayer money is going, Croak said. And I think at this critical time, when you have household budgets that are, you know, really tight, and then our state budget is getting very tight, people want to know how you're using taxpayer money. Kim said she will also focus on increasing privacy protections for personal data. Villette didn't offer specifics about her initiatives beyond calling for new taxes, which is ultimately left up to the governor and legislature. She said the job can't just be about paying bills on time. Villette, Kim, and Croak said they support keeping the office separate from the treasurer, the state's chief investment officer, citing corruption problems in the office when the responsibilities were merged under the one roof prior to the 1970 Constitution. Kifowitz, however, said she would be open to combining the offices if there were enough checks and balances to provide safeguards. And there are four individual portrait photos of the candidates in order: Villa, Croak, Kifowitz, and Kim. And with that, we have come to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 10th, 2026. We'll take a short break and return with the second half hour.